The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You're listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, here we are at the last stand of the season. Yes, it is the Miami Pro, and this is the latest edition of the TWBC podcast. My thanks to you out there for continuing to support this podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot, and great to have you on board. Also great to have on board, and he's been having the season of his life up to this point, Mr. Corey Vaughn. So how have you been in recent times?
Well, I've been great, Tony. I'm finishing out the season down here in Florida. Got to come down for the King of Darkness, which was a great event. And then I've stayed in my motorhome in Florida since then. Went to Pentalago, got to ski with my old buddy Noah Veek for a few days. And then cruised on down here to Miami, where I'm currently living in the street. And just finished taking my first practice ride here. And I'll tell you, it felt sweet out there. We're going to have quite a show this weekend.
Indeed, indeed, and you've been providing quite a show during a good portion of the season. You came through with your first ever professional win for however long it's taken you to get there. Close to 15 years you've been doing this pro water skiing thing, you know. So what was that like?
Well, just like you said, I mean, it's been 15 years in the making, and I guess I learned only after the fact that I was the oldest skier to ever take their first win, a title which I really appreciate, by the way. And I feel like that's just been the case for me. I didn't have the early start in this elite bubble of skiing like many others, and I kind of came to it from a different path. But you know, I love this sport, and I stayed with it, and I kind of continued to dream big and chase things down. And the further it went, the bigger the dreams got. And that one, as I said afterwards, I didn't know if it would ever come, because I'll be darned, it is hard. Look at these guys and how well everyone is skiing. So, you know, for that to come true, I mean, it was a special moment. And even now, words escape me. You know, I tried to put some words to it in the interview right afterwards. And, you know, there really aren't any. After 15 years of trying your heart out to finally get something that you've been chasing, it's a special moment, and this season has provided a few more, and I'm just deeply thankful for the season that it's been.
Yeah, I remember that interview, that post-performance interview with Lauren Morgan at the Oxfordshire Pro-Am, your first ever pro win. And sometimes in the short amount of time that you have in that interview, you got to try and sum it up into a few words, but I'm sure you had plenty more.
Yeah, I mean, I was overcome by emotion. I mean, I literally had to take a knee. I was nearly having to remind myself to breathe. And then I knew the camera was going to be coming to me. And I'm glad that I was able to say a couple of the right things, the important things to me. Thank my wife, thank my grandfather, you know, as the two people who I felt like had the biggest hand in getting me to that place. And behind them are just so many more people that I owe a debt of gratitude. I mean, we're talking about, you know, dozens of people, if not hundreds of people, and I hope that they know who they are. Even in this format, it's too lengthy to start going down the list, but I've been able to be in touch with a lot of those people privately, and as I said, in a moment like that, there there are no words to describe that sense of satisfaction and, quite frankly, relief that after all the work and all the hopes, it finally came through.
You added the U.S. National Slalom title to that a few weeks, a week or two later over in Bakersfield, California. I mean, obviously not a pro title, but I'm sure it's one that you still value above many that you've held onto over these years.
Yeah, well, that was a special thing too, because it was actually my first ever national title. Going back to, you know, being a junior, you know, like I said, I wasn't really part of an elite ski culture or club, and so I only went to the nationals three times as a junior. I did get a second and a third which I was, you know, extremely happy with. And then as a as an adult, I think I got a third in a men's one, and then I went into the Open. And, you know, so that was my first national title. And again, you know, the likes of Nate Smith and John Travers and Terry Winter, some heavy hitters there to contend with. So, yeah, that was very meaningful. And my family and many friends were there as well. So, and my wife also took third place in her second ever national championship.
There you go.
So it was just a great family trip. You know, we really, really got to enjoy it.
Indeed, in the searing heat of Bakersfield. Now, if... As if those two accomplishments during the course of the season weren't enough, I mean, just this past weekend, you went to King of Darkness to compete in that event, and you ran into 43 Offer for the first time ever, and there are less than I would say a dozen skiers in the entirety of the sport that have actually run into that high echelon line length, and your name is one of them now.
Yeah, well, so it's not my first time. This was my third time, actually. I did it in 2015 and 2016.
But in a pro competition at that level.
In a pro competition, that's a different story. And that list is probably much shorter of people who have done it. So that was, I mean, it ended an eight-year drought. That was something that was kind of on my professional bucket list, so to speak, was to get back into 43 and for it to come in a moment like that at a pro event where you needed to, because everyone was skiing lights out, and you know, five at 41 turned out to not make the cut, at least one person with five. That was a very, very special moment, and you know, yeah, part of this sort of storybook season that it's been, you know, it really has been a fantastic one.
You're giving yourself a bit of a you know, a time crunch a little bit to get whatever you've got on your bucket list in terms of pro skiing done. I mean, I heard from someone that this season might have been the time to scale down and not pursue the pro tour to its fullest extent. But from what I'm able to tell, it's going to be next year, which just happens to be a world tier.
Yeah, that was intentional. Basically, at the end of the 2022 season, I decided I had a bad season. I was kind of had some doubts. But in short, I've decided I was going to make a three-year plan, try to max out, you know, this basically list of goals that I had for myself, give myself about 1,000 days to do it and train hard, focus up, put all my resources into it. And basically that would carry me through the 2025 season, with Worlds obviously being a major culmination of the arc of that timeline. So, you know, last year I felt like I really gained some traction. It was my best season ever up until that point. And this year has taken another step forward, which really, really makes me feel happy and satisfied that this plan is bearing out and bearing fruit. And, you know, I'm going off of this hope and this belief that I can continue to put in the work, and by working diligently and keeping a strong focus, that will continue to lead towards some of these outcomes that I want. And, you know, we'll see. Right now, I kind of have my sights set on finishing this season. This is the final event. It's been a long year. Once this is over, I will be ready for some rest. I'm going to put the ski down until 2025. But I'm going to put in the work in the off season and try to fire it back up strong for a great final lap, so to speak, as a full-time pro skier.
Tell us about the ski, because, I mean, there's a story behind that, too.
Yeah, I mean, the ski has certainly been, you know, it lined up right with this three-year plan. I did decide that I had to start looking around and make a number of changes, the ski potentially being one of them. I tried a couple of things. And then when I tried this KD ski, it stole my heart. It was immediately, I realized, a great fit and something that I could, you know, I could contend on. And then this year, we came out with a new model. Not huge changes, but enough change that, I mean, I would credit a lot of the success of this season to a couple of the smart changes that we made to the ski, one of them being, I think a big one being the fin, new fin shape, new fin numbers, like those new settings with the ski seem to, you know, new flex pattern. I think we've really got it dialed in. So I will be on the same ski, you know, the same setup next year. I feel like I have confidence in what that can do. And, you know, I'm hoping to bring some more folks to the Team KD. I mean, right now it's a one-man team, but I hope to build that out. And I know that the ski is capable and can do it. And yeah, I've been trying to take it around and prove that. And I'm hoping that it'll catch on.
Because, I mean, from what I heard, I mean, it was a really, really simple case of just taking your binding settings. When you tried this ski for the first time, just take the binding settings, take the fin settings, transfer it from your old ski, put it onto this one, and, you know, it was piece of cake from there, relatively speaking.
Exactly. I did that, and I never made a single change for the entirety of last season. The setup that I put out for the first time testing the ski is the setup I ran through the entire season without a single change. And then, like I said, actually, the funny thing is this year we decided to make this change with the fin. And I thought, okay, you know, no big deal. How much difference could it really make? But then my standard fin settings that I always run, they really didn't work very well. So it was kind of back to the drawing board. I tried, you know, one philosophy on the fin, you know, in testing. That didn't work. I tried another one, kind of some old Andy Mapple style numbers. That didn't work. And I was starting to get a little nervous. I was like, maybe this change was a mistake because I had something that worked and now I'm not finding it. Luckily, kind of the third fin philosophy that I tested out, it clicked. And that's what I'm riding now. And luckily, that was very fortuitous. I think it actually is a good step up from what we were running last year. So that actually worked out in a serendipitous way. And now we're a leg up.
All right, then almost every skier that I'd speak to, you know, has certain keys and certain things they tune in on, you know, whenever they go out and ski, you know, and try and achieve those keys, because if they do that, then the chance of them actually producing a high echelon score is definitely enhanced. What keys do you have?
Yeah, I mean, the main things for this weekend are going to be gate timing. I'm going to try to use each pass to really find that rhythmic flow that allows me to be turning in from the highest point on the boat with speed, with fluidity, being committed, you know, to that center line right from the outset. You know, hopefully pass by pass, I can get that better. So as we get to the hardest passes, it's dialed in. That's a main key. And then the other one that I've been playing with this past week is actually just driving a bit more load side to side so that I don't slip down course and I exit the wake with a bit more swing, and that gives the ski a little bit more natural propulsion through the edge change and gets it swinging outbound as I need it to at 41 at the right timing. So I took a practice set, tried to execute on those keys. It was feeling pretty good out there. And, you know, I've got, like I said, hopefully three sets left for this season. And I want to make every buoy count. And I just really want to enjoy finishing the season, skiing in warm water with a great driver. You know, we got Becky this weekend and great, great course, great conditions. So I'm just going to really try to savor this.
All right. Normally, these podcast episodes are trying to keep relatively short, you know, to about 30 minutes. We're almost on minute 14 right now. And by way of spicing up the podcast a little bit, I actually... Here's the story with this. I mean, I normally bring with me a pad, you know, one of those lockable type things with like a latch. And in that pad, I have these decks of cards that actually have question prompts for interviews and for episodes prompts. And, you know, I tried initially with this podcast to actually introduce that right from the beginning. It didn't really work so hot then, but I think as the season draws to a close, I think I should reintroduce those cards. And I've actually got 10 cards here from the What the Heck deck, which I presented to Corey a little bit before this podcast, you know, so he kind of knows what's coming up. Now, These have questions which are kind of like a little bit off the ball, but they are quite, they can be quite revealing depending upon the answer. So I've got 10 of these. Maybe we do all 10. Maybe we do maybe 6, 7, or 8. We'll see how this goes.
Yeah, okay? We can go rapid fire. We'll just have some fun. We'll rattle through these things.
Absolutely. So got 10 cards. They're all spread out. So pick one.
Oh, okay. I pick it. You want me to read off the question and then answer it? Huh?
No, I'll actually read out the question. Okay. Have you ever picked up a hitchhiker?
Actually, yes. This was about a year and a half. It's about 2 years ago now. I was going to a Dead & Company concert. I was actually riding in a van that was painted to be the Mystery Machine with my good friend Scott Stanger. And there was a hitchhiker on the side of the road. He had a sign that said he was trying to get to the show. And in true Deadhead spirit, we picked him up. And he gets in. He's so thankful. In fact, then he says he had to stop at a Walgreens to get his COVID shot or else he wouldn't be allowed into the show. So we took him to a Walgreens. He literally ran in, ran out, got back in the car. We go to the show. He said, by the way, keep an eye out for me. Like, I really appreciate you guys. I'll be Waldo. You'll see me in there. And we're like, what? He's like, I'll be dressed as, where's Waldo? And sure enough, we got our way up into the pit, the front section, right in front of the band. And as the show's winding down, who do we spot but Waldo? Yep, we caught up with him. And you know what? I've seen him one time since because where's Waldo? He was dressed again and saw him at a different show. So, yep, pick up hitchhikers if, that's not a carte blanche statement. I'll pick up hitchhikers when I think it's okay.
All right, then. That's an interesting one. For those of you that are wondering what's Waldo or where's Waldo, it's translated into various other titles. Where's Wally or... In England and in a few other countries around the world, they changed the name a little bit. No wonder you can't find him. He keeps changing his name. but there you go. Let's pick another card. All right, hand me the card. When you were a kid, did you have any posters on your wall? If so, of what?
Yes, I can really just think of the main one, which was a water ski collage that I created, just cutting pictures out of the Water Ski magazine. I had Andy Mapple, Wade Cox, Freddy Krueger. I had to think of the Clemson ski team was on there because I wanted to go there. And maybe a couple girls in bikinis as well.
Okie dokie. So that was fairly short and sweet. Pick another card. Okay. Have you ever licked a battery?
Easy one. Yes, of course. 9-volt. Got to check it. Got to check and see if it's got a charge. Yes, I have.
Short and sweet. Pick another card. We're going rapid fire on these ones. Describe your sense of humor in one word.
Goofy.
Goofy.
Yeah, I like silly stuff. Slapstick, just like my son. All right.
All right.
That's another one.
Here's another one. What's the grossest thing you've ever seen someone do in public?
Oh, grossest. I used to ride a city bus in Washington, D.C. daily, this is not the grossest thing. I actually did have someone follow me off the bus to my house. I actually had to go to the neighbor's house and call my mom, call the police. So that was unpleasant, but I'm betting...
What age was this?
I would have been about 15, something like that. It was a man followed me off the bus. He was dressed in a trench coat. It was very... it became clear when he followed me all the way to the house. I did this route every day. It was not right. I'm sure I saw some unsavory things around me that happened, but always under the trench coat. So fortunately, I didn't see too much.
Okay. All right, then. Pick another card. And the card he picks is, what is your favorite microwavable food?
Easy. Yeah, I discovered this year. A microwave actually does a very good job on a sweet potato. They normally have a potato setting. This was a revelation. You'd think that, 39 years of life, I would have figured this out sooner. But, roasting it, of course, the best. But if you need it on the quick, microwave does a pretty good job on a sweet potato.
Yep. That kind of reveals the Irishness in you, I'm guessing.
Oh, man. Irish. I love the potatoes. Yes, I do.
All right, there. So here we go. Do you have a favorite number and any particular reason why you like that number?
Well, yeah, I've got two, I guess, that are kind of go-tos. I like 11, I guess partly, in large part, because I met my wife on the 11th of August, and that's like our anniversary, so that number stands out. And then I also really like 21, just my favorite football player, Sean Taylor, who actually went down here to the University of Miami. He He was number 21. So I've
always, was he a tight end?
He was a safety, and then he played for the Washington Commanders, and he was, you know, one of the great all-time safeties, and unfortunately was shot in his home down here and was killed. So to honor him, I think, you know, sometimes like 11 and 21 when I'm working out, like 10 and 20 are round numbers, but it's like, you know, get that one more rep, just overdo it just that little bit. I think part of it's that too.
All right, then, three more cards, and here is the first of them. Have you ever been bitten or attacked by an animal? And if so, what and why?
Oh, well, let's see. I did once get kind of chomped in the leg by a dog, by a pit bull. Nothing too traumatic. Like, luckily, it didn't escalate into anything worse.
I chuckle because we're in Miami.
Well, that's right. And then, you know, just yesterday, I was on a fan boat tour in the Everglades, and my mom was... She had a bird land on her hand and was feeding it a little piece of a Cheeto, and it missed, and it nicked her in the hand, drew blood a little bit.
So ouch.
My mom got bit by a bird yesterday.
Lovely.
Yeah.
All right, there. Two cards remaining. And what strange thing would you like to have happen at your funeral that would make people laugh?
Oh, golly. I mean, I would like something. If anyone's got some good ideas, I welcome this. A wish, you know, to lighten the mood.
Now I did see something on like a TikTok post or something like that for on Instagram where they actually buried someone in Ireland, and they put a remote control audio player with a speaker in his casket. You know,
that might be a little too far. I think maybe something during the wake portion when people are talking. You know, if somebody wants to give me a roast, I would accept that. You know, you can say all of the, you can make fun of me in a good humored way. I would appreciate that. Or, you know, yeah, something like that. I'm not sure what else, but I would welcome it. I want it to be a festive occasion. I've had a great life, and I hope that it's celebrated when it's over, whenever that might be.
All right, then, and here we go. This is the final card. Have you ever been arrested? And if so, for what?
Bum, bum, bum. Yes, yeah, I've been arrested. I drunk in public, I got to go to jail. And I guess the funny, so I was going into a University of Virginia football game with all of my Clemson attire on. So I think I was a little bit singled out. Was I intoxicated in public? Yes. Were a bunch of other people? Yes. Was it this? It was the same way I went into a lot of games at Clemson, and it was never a problem. But I guess I fell asleep in the jail. And then when I woke up, I asked somebody what day it was, and it was supposed to be Saturday, and they told me Monday.
What?
And I freaked out, and I thought I was supposed to be at work. And then they said, no, we're just kidding. It's Sunday. And I was like, Sunday? Did the Redskins win? And they're like, dude, chill out. You know, it's still Saturday. You know, they made me sober up until I could get my phone call, and, you know, my cousins came and they bailed me out. But, yeah, there's a mugshot out there somewhere, and to this day, I haven't been able to get global entry, so maybe it's been over 10 years. Maybe I can try it again.
Yeah, absolutely, because that could be a little bit of a game-changer going forwards, especially with next season coming up being the world's year and everything. Do you want to try and...
Well, I mean, I can still travel. I just don't get, like, the expedited line, you know. So, kids, there are consequences. Don't do that. Don't go get arrested. You know, you can take a page from, you know, I've turned a page. Now I'm sober and I don't drink at all. And I think that's worked out a lot better.
All right, then. So that went better than I anticipated for with those cards. I might have to do that with some more interviews going forward. But thanks a lot, Corey. I mean this isn't the first time I've interviewed this season, and certainly won't be the last time that we cross paths. And I might even have you on the mic during the actual webcast itself, but hopefully not during the men's, because you would be in the men's competition if all things go to plan.
Hey, always a pleasure, Tony. Love hanging with you, and let's put on a great show this weekend.
All right, then, and that's been the latest TWBC podcast episode. Corey. Another thing, any thanks that you want to give to people as I typically round off the podcast in that fashion?
Oh, sure. I mean, number one, thanks to my wife. You know, she's been bearing some extra burden at home to allow me to come off and finish off the season with King of Darkness and Miami, and and, you know, she's my training partner at home and has supported me all the way through all of these seasons, and in particular this one with all the intensity that it has brought. And my son, you know, I miss him, and it's a sacrifice for him too. And then also my mom and my stepdad and my stepbrother and his wife are here. They're going to come and spectate at the event this weekend. So I'm excited to have some family on site and the extra support. So I really thank them for making the effort to come make the trip.
All right, then, and with that concludes this episode of the TWBC podcast, and another episode will no doubt be winging its way to you very, very soon. But in the meantime, my name's Tony Lightfoot, thanking you for your support once again. And as always, ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.